Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Global Ports Holdings' nine-month and Q3 results presentation. On the line with me, I have Mehmet Küçükmen, Co-founder and Chairman, Emre Sen, Chief Executive Officer, and Jan van Veren, CFO. I will now hand you over to Mehmet Küçükmen.
Thank you, Martin, and thanks, everybody, for joining us on today's call. Good afternoon or good morning, wherever you are. As you all know, when we last spoke back in August, I discussed that the outlook for the cruise industry for the second half of the year was uncertain and that we remained in crisis management mode, given our caution over the spread of the recovery in the cruise industry. I also mentioned that major cruise lines had recently reported strong bookings trends for 2021, which was at that time encouraging when we considered the long-term outlook for the cruise industry and GPH. Since then, a number of factors have arisen that have shown that we were justified in our cautious stance. However, unfortunately, we believe that these factors also mean that outlook for Q4 2020 and 2021 is now more challenging than we had hoped for only a few months ago. While cruise activity has restarted in the Mediterranean and Asia, activity levels remain extremely low, with occupancy rates less than 50%. Most significantly, as we head into the winter in the Northern Hemisphere, the potential of a significant travel restrictions in Europe looks to be some way off, with a second wave of COVID-19 cases sweeping Europe, leading to a tightening of travel restrictions rather than the hoped-for easing. A good example has been the cancellation of MSC Magnifica sailings out of Italy, all the way through mid to end December. In the U.S., the CDC has replaced its no-sail order with a framework for conditional sailing order for cruise ships. However, there is little to suggest there will be a meaningful return, if any at all, to cruising in the U.S. and therefore also the Caribbean in the near term. And the current political situation in the U.S., hopefully today it's a bit clearer than it used to be, probably extends that uncertainty still further. Of course, you will have also seen the recent positive news about the potential COVID-19 vaccine. Clearly, if a vaccine was to become widely, and I stress the word widely, available, it could have a significant positive impact on the cruise industry recovery and, by extension, of course, GPH. As you all know, we recently announced that we had entered into a conditional sale and purchase agreement with Q Terminals for the sale of Port Akdeniz for an enterprise value of $140 million. While the sale remains conditional upon certain regulatory clearances and approvals from a number of Turkish government authorities, I expect financial close to occur before the end of the year or early next year at the latest. The disposal of Port Akdeniz, Antalya, will, once completed, mean that GPH will effectively become a pure-play cruise port operator, fulfilling a long-standing ambition and strategic goal of the group. While the near-term uncertainty in cruise remains, I believe the timing of such an important strategic step will prove to be very fortuitous. I'm confident that the industry will recover, and as it does, I expect the demand for governments and port authorities for improved management of their cruise ports, and in many cases, investments into the cruise ports will only rise as a result of this crisis. Keeping in mind that most of these cruise ports, especially in the Caribbean, and the industry or the country is very heavily dependent on tourism, their fiscal balance is very, very bad, not having received a single tourist for the last 9 months, and we're entering the peak season for the region. Simply put, I expect governments will have many other projects and services that will require support ahead of investment in their cruise port assets. However, in many cases, these same cruise port assets are in need of investment if they want to maintain recent cruise passenger volume, never mind the growth volumes. As the world's largest cruise port operator, this places our company, Global Ports Holding, in a strong strategic position as we emerge from this crisis and we look into the long-term growth as a pure cruise port operator. Now I'd like to hand over to Emre. Emre Bey?
Thank you, Mehmet Bey, thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, or good morning. Thank you for joining us for today's call. I would like to quickly talk about the performance of the business in Q3 before turning it over to Jan to take us through the numbers. I would also like to share some thoughts with you on what we are seeing emerge in terms of new opportunities. Overall, despite the worsening economic outlook globally, trading at our commercial ports in Q3 has continued to be resilient. In particular, I must commend the team at Port Akdeniz, Antalya, who faced not just COVID-19 and the macroeconomic conditions, but also the additional work due to the ongoing sales process of the port. Port Adria also seems to perform according to expectations, and they might actually make even their plans. On the cruise side, the cruise calls restarting in the Med and Asia during the quarter, starting, we experienced the return of cruise passengers to a small number of our ports in the period. The good thing about that is that we have seen we're ready in terms of our protocols. However, it's important to understand that both calls and passenger numbers remain very low, and the Med is now heading into the quiet winter season. In the US and the Caribbean, as Mehmet Bey mentioned, the industry is getting ready to start, but the near-term outlook remains uncertain, and the impact of a potential vaccine remains to be seen still. In the past, I talked extensively about the swift actions we took in Q2 to reduce the costs and preserve cash, so I will not go over them again now. It is worth mentioning, however, that costs have been reduced quickly and with relatively little friction. And we made sure that we can come back with equal ease and speed, whether it is an industry-wide emergence or a slower port-by-port recovery. Our main focus right now is the Eurobond, and Jan will talk about that in more detail. If we go over to the next slide. As part of our actions to reduce costs and conserve cash, we have significantly reduced our outward-facing Newport activity. Though we are not roaming the world on airplanes as we used to, our reputation and our existing network is enough to create some opportunities still. Plus, with the cruise lines focusing on their core business, GPH becomes an even more interesting option for ports and governments in the future. Some of these opportunities do not require extensive investment or running costs on our side, but they would still benefit. From being a part of the global ports network. For example, we recently partnered with Baleria Group, one of the world's largest passenger ferry operators, in their tender submission for a 35-year concession of the port of Valencia in Spain. Under the partnership, Baleria Group will invest $37 million into the infrastructure at the port, including a new environmentally friendly passenger terminal. GPH's role will be to focus solely on managing the cruise port operations at the port. Another example is Taranto, where we would assume a 20-year concession in a new state-of-the-art cruise port facility, which has actually been built by the state. The results of this tender should be announced very soon. Although both these examples are not nearly as sizable as cruise ports like Nassau, they will still improve our presence in the Med and carry profit potential for the future. And in both cases, we have a footprint in the region in terms of other ports, so we believe that we will be able to bolt on ports like that relatively easily and reduce our running costs. Longer term, the larger transformational investment concession opportunities have not gone away. In fact, we are seeing an increase in such opportunities. And however, we are very careful in terms of cost and investment into such projects in order to manage through this crisis. But we're not turning a blind eye to them either. Each and every opportunity will, of course, be analyzed on its own merits, And I expect in a number of cases, we will work with partners. While uncertainty remains over the near term outlook, I think it is important to understand that there's a wide range of exciting projects in our pipeline as we emerge from the crisis. As the saying goes, never waste a good crisis. With that, I will hand over to Jan to run us through some of the financials. Jan?
Thank you, Emre Bey. Thanks, Mehmet Bey. Also from my side, good morning, good afternoon to all participants. Appreciate your interest. Well, as you just heard, and as previously disclosed, we are looking back at a relatively busy period recently, particularly regarding the Antalya sales process. The financial update I'm going to cover over the next couple of slides, though, we don't have any major surprises, and it reflects a continuation of the trends we discussed during the most recent interim update, continuation of trends of the second quarter. Let me start by explaining that all the numbers subsequently presented and included in our RNS do represent the unaudited financials for a fully consolidated Port Actinis. As of end of September 2020, the SPA wasn't signed, so all the numbers still have Port Actinis included for the full 9 months. The two main trends we observe continue to be that there is virtually no cruise traffic, and accordingly, traditional cruise terminal revenues. And we are, during the third quarter, have generated less than 10% of the revenue generated during last year's third quarter. The revenue generated is mostly related to retail revenue, other ancillary, and revenue streams we didn't have before, like layup of ships and other cruise sector interruption-related revenue streams. But thanks to the flexible cost structure Amber has briefly touched upon and we explained in detail during previous updates, and decisive cost-cutting measures, the monthly cash burn EBITDA loss can be minimized and is minimized of just under 3 million, under 1 million per month during the third quarter 2020. Secondly, we do have continue to see stable performance in the commercial segment overall, both ports, slightly higher EBITDA even during the period, third quarter period, which is more than offsetting the EBITDA loss in the cruise segment during the third quarter and year to date. So that when we're looking at page 8, the page shown on the Zoom webinar, let me start with the KPIs on top of the page. As you said, during the third quarter, less than 10,000 passengers during what typically is a busy period in our Mediterranean, the most busiest period during the year in Mediterranean ports, and a growth within the cargo segment, continued even stronger growth trends in general and bulk cargo, and modest decline. Commercial segment doesn't remain immune to the impacts of COVID-19, but a stable performance compared to the first half 2020. Moving to the revenue, I would advise that, as previously disclosed, cruise revenue should be considered excluding IFRIC 12 cruise revenue, which is related to the construction activity in Nassau, so the second row within the cruise within the revenue segment shows the decline I was just mentioning, with really two parts of this year, a strong first quarter, mainly driven by Caribbean ports, and a virtual standstill suspension of the industry, and only quite recently, towards the end of the third quarter, the first calls which we were able to welcome in European ports. In the commercial segment, as I said, a decline compared to last year, but still a stable performance compared to the first half of this year. Moving to EBITDA, we continue to see the same trends as in the second quarter. Overall, a positive EBITDA during the third quarter and year to date, but a EBITDA loss in absence of revenue in the cruise segment, more than offset more than offset by the commercial EBITDA. Commercial remains a highly profitable segment. If we then move on to the next slides, we have with the similar slides as described last year, broken down the performance both in revenue and EBITDA. It's a similar picture with respect to the interim update, a positive contribution from the first time consideration, from the first time consolidation, of the new cruise ports Antigua and Nassau, 5.5 million from Nassau, 2.5 million from Antigua, totaling 8 million, which is virtually unchanged compared to Q1 and the interim update. And what, as I said, would have been a busy period in Mediterranean ports, plus the contribution expected, although lower because of seasonality from Nassau and Antigua, has unfortunately not happened. So that overall, plus the modest decline in commercial ports, will ending the 9 month period with lower revenues overall. And currently we don't expect this picture to change during the fourth quarter and the trading we've seen so far since the end of the last quarter. There is moving to the EBITDA development in the next slide, that I don't think we have to go into greater detail. The same picture with respect to the two worlds, so to speak, in the cruise segment and commercial, and a positive contribution from the cost cutting in the central cost has nevertheless led to a lower overall adjusted EBITDA. Moving on to the financial highlights below EBITDA. Net finance costs have increased due to the new loans incurred during the period, mostly in Nassau, or exclusively in Nassau and Antigua. We'll come back to that in a second. And the debt information at the bottom of the slide, gross debt stands at 575 million. That includes 66 million of IFRS 16 finance lease, so future concession fee payments accounted for in our balance sheet. As I said, 66 million. I would argue the gross debt number of 508 million is more representative of actual borrowings and debt. That's an increase of about 14 million compared to half year. And that 14 million is continued CapEx program financed by loans in our Antigua port. And the remainder is accrued interest because of mainly the Eurobond at Global Demand level. Cash and cash equivalents have a standard 100 and close to 110 million, 109 million. That is about 13 million less as opposed to the 30 June 2020, which is, we'll break it down in the next slide, mainly driven by continued CapEx spending in Antigua and Nassau. Of that 109 million, about 35, slightly higher, about 10% higher as opposed to 30th June 2020, would be sitting within the GLI perimeter, and the remainder in PLC, mostly Nassau, from the recent bond issue. The next slide, operating cash flow. As I said before, we continue to see a positive operating cash flow, which is higher actually than EBITDA generation. And that's mostly driven by a positive change in working capital. That was, if you remember, 8.8 million at half year, has further increased 11 million, thanks to a stringent management of liquidity, but also, to be fair, a winding down of trade receivables generated in the first half of the year, with no new trade receivables being generated in the cruise segment. Investment activity, mostly CapEx, 64 million, the vast majority of which in our Caribbean projects, as previously disclosed. Since the onset of the COVID crisis, we have limited all other CapEx to essential maintenance CapEx, and it remains very low since the end of the first quarter. But our investment will remain committed to commitments made to our government partners in Antigua and Nassau with over 20 million or about 20 million of CapEx spending in the third quarter, bringing the total to 64 in the last 9 months, most of which in Nassau, and also continued progress in our Antigua new pier development. Last but not least, coming back to the debt picture in the final slide of this of the stack. Thank you, Martin. I think we talked about most of the trend, and I think kind of the main question and main point to address is obviously the debt repayment profile you see at the bottom of this page, with a peak in 2021. That's the it's about a year from now. Our Eurobond at Global Lehman level, and clearly now with the entire sale process having reached a signing stage, focus is first and foremost closing that agreement in a timely fashion, and as well as previously disclosed, our focus is on addressing and paying full attention to addressing the maturity of the Eurobond due November 2021. We will update the market as soon as possible about timing and structure. But rest assured that this will be a key focus. It remains and will remain a key focus of the entire management team. Martin, back to you for the Q&A session.
I think, Emre, do you want to make some concluding remarks before we go on to the Q&A?
No, I think it was a very clear period with, you know, continued steady performance on the commercial side and no cruise activity, basically. And I guess our you know, message different than August is basically the level of uncertainty is just higher than we expected in the middle of this year. And the fact that the US is still, you know, uncertain as to any date whatsoever kind of, you know, throws our any plans that we might have had. With, you know, coupled with the success on the cost saving side, you know, I'm confident the company will be ready when the cruise resumes. The whole question is when. I think that's the summary of what we said. And of course, our focus on the Eurobonds and closing the sale of Antalya. That's it. So I think we can start with the Q&A.
Okay, thank you, Emre and Jan. Everybody, if you can use the raise your hand functionality on Zoom, it will let me know that you have a question or questions that you want to ask the team, and then I will try and give you permission to talk. I'll obviously do that one at a time. I'll give everybody a minute or so to register their interest in asking a question.
Martin, can you also make sure that there are some questions through the chat room? Those are answered if you read them or whoever has to answer. I see one question there.
Yeah, we'll try and get round to that. Okay. So far, we have a question from Owen Reid. Owen, please go ahead and ask your question.
Yeah. Hi, guys. It's Owen here from Berenberg. I have a few, if that's okay. My first question is just on that outlook you mentioned. It would just be good to get a bit of color on what's changed, what your initial expectations were in H1. Was there assumption that there would be material cruising in the Caribbean, and now it doesn't look like that? Or just some color on how your expectations have changed over the last 3 months would be great. Do you want me to go through the rest of the questions and then answer them all at once?
Do you want me to take, or do you want to take the question?
Mehmet Bey, I can answer, and if you have any additional comments, I think, you know, something that I would definitely add to the list of what has changed is the situation in the USA. I think it was very reasonable to assume that cruising would first start in the USA, because that's where cruising started. It's the biggest market, and you know, we were all expecting at least the activity to have started by now. But it took much longer for the cruise lines to reach a common understanding with the CDC. And it's hard to say that, you know, that understanding is clear in terms of when the activity will resume. So naturally, we were expecting some business in Q4 in the Caribbean. And the ports in the Caribbean, especially Nassau, is very important to our numbers. And obviously, if that had been the case, then we would be looking at Q1 with a very different lens. And that has not happened. So hence, you know, the USA is definitely one thing that has changed since the first half of the year. Another thing is, of course, at that point in time, there was some talk about a possible rise in the cases of COVID come winter, but I don't think anyone expected the second wave to be higher than the first wave. So that is different too. I think, you know, combining those two events and adding the uncertainty more than anything else, you know, it's hard to make any guess as to when and with what kind of force this thing will come back and restart is the reason why we're saying there's more uncertainty now than we had estimated in the past. Mehmet Bey, would you like to add anything?
Yeah, a few words. I mean, if you look to the cruise industry's HSE health and safety record, it's better than any other business that I have seen. These ships are probably health-wise, and there is novavirus threat, for example, in the past. The ratio on cruise ships is 0.005 something versus 6.5% on land or even airplanes. Unfortunately, the industry's public relation has not been that great. That's one factor. The other factor is CDC has announced a framework for sailing again. And that framework probably will take about 2 to 3 months. And they will operate in a bubble scenario where all passengers and all crew will be tested. They'll be tested at port of embarkation. They'll be tested before disembarkation again. So it will be a completely bubble. I do believe that the America-based cruise operations will start as early as February, as late as probably April, May, which will give enough time for the cruise lines to implement, including those trial runs, as they call it, all the frameworks of CDC. But again, once they come back, they'll probably be the safest travel mean to operate or to take a travel as a passenger or as a guest, compared to airlines or any other industry. Thank you.
Okay, that's really helpful. And I guess just following on from that, I think you mentioned initially in your Q1 update, what feels like a lifetime ago, that your analysis had suggested that all your cruise ports could survive without any external capital until 2022.
Correct.
Is that still the case, or has that been extended or shortened in any cases?
That's probably the case. I'll let Jan answer that question, but 2022 seems a good number. But Jan, do you want to say?
No, agreed. I mean, I think if anything, the Q3 numbers have proven that, you know, we said earlier that half year update is not really relevant, because it's a mix between a strong Q1 and a you know, cost cutting or adjustment to the COVID environment, which happened kind of live during the second quarter. As you've seen, we've been kind of, you know, pretty spot on with the numbers of you know, a bit less or up to 1 million of monthly cash burn in the cruise segment, hence leading to actually slightly less, 3 million EBITDA loss in the third quarter and about 200,000-300,000 of central cost. Again, that's exactly the number we have reached during the third quarter. So yes, no change with respect to that was all as expected going forward in the new cruise environment, worst case assumption.
Okay.
To add on to Jan, each cruise port has a survivability month. On average, it's about 20 months without having the support of the parent company. Some goes as long as 30 plus months, some goes down to 18 months, but on average, it's about 20 months.
Okay. Great, good to know. And then the last question I had was just on the remaining CapEx spend on Nassau and Antigua. Do you have a number for that?
Jan?
Yep, okay, sure. We are starting with Antigua, the smaller one. The new pier is essentially completed. What remains to be done is the dredging around it. We are having under a fixed price EPC contract entered into a bit more than 3 million to spend. Part of it will probably go into 2021 because, you know, payment always lacks the completion certificates. But essentially completion will be reached this year with, as I said, another around of $3 million to be spent, fully funded and financed by the committed debt facility in place. We are still discussing the continued spending in Nassau. We're finalizing the numbers there. We have spent to date in the nine months of 2020, 45.5 million in Nassau. As you know, we have disclosed that the investment commitment could be up to $250 million. We'll likely end up lower than that, but it is still subject to further discussions with construction partners.
Great, thank you very much.
Martin, the questions on the chat room, all three questions are more or less the same. If you don't mind, let me combine them and ask to Jan. Basically, Jan, the question is, excluding Antigua and Nassau cash, how much cash is available? That's one part of the question, unrestricted cash. And the second part is, what are the possible paths that you can take on the Eurobond refinancing side? Those questions are from Oliver Kostos, Mehmet Ali Güleç, and Chris Becchiario.
So starting with the first one, as I said earlier in the presentation, I think it's more meaningful to look at the PLC parameter and the GLI parameter, the bond issuer and subsidiaries. Cash at this level, second level, is around 35 million, so 73 million would be adding up to the 108 million total of cash consolidated at as of end of September 2020. And with respect to, we're exploring all options, right? As everybody knows internally and for the investors, it's key focus for us to addressing the upcoming maturity of the Eurobond. We will disclose further details in due course. But I think it would be too early to speculate about the specific path. But all options are being evaluated, and I hope to be able to communicate a more clearer path forward in the near future.
Shall we define this in the relatively near future?
As soon as possible. It won't. I mean, we know it's an important process. But we have to still go through the process.
Yep. Okay, Martin.
Okay. Owen, do you have any further questions?
No, that's all for me. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next question comes from Greg Johnson from Shore Capital. Please unmute your line and go ahead, Greg.
Afternoon, gentlemen. Just a couple of quick questions. Could I ask the Antigua and Nassau a slightly different way, please, if possible. Uh, what
is the net debt position, excluding Nassau and Antigua at the 9 month stage? And how much has been invested to date, including equity? And secondly, can you just provide a bit more granularity on the performance of Port Adria and post the sale of Agdenes? What are the long term aspirations for the port are, please?
I can maybe start quickly with the second one on performance, and then let you, Mehmet, discuss on the strategic objectives.
I think the question is not on the performance of Adria, but more the strategic outlook for Adria, if I'm not wrong.
I think it's both of them. Jan, why don't you start with Antigua and Nassau and the numbers, equity invested and things like that. You discuss the granularity of Adria, and then I'll take the Adria strategy.
Sure. We do not disclose the specific details of the investment mix in a port by port entity. I would please kindly ask you that that remains subject to the consolidated statement we will release in due course, as always in each quarter, the GRI financials, Lehman, the bond issuer, on our website, and you can see the consolidated performance at this level. As I said, the total debt at this level, excluding the Antigua and Nassau debt. So, starting with the 508 million of total debt, excluding IFRS 16 leases, which I think is the relevant notion to look at, would be approximately 155 million combined, has been as of September 2020, is the debt at Nassau and Antigua. Accordingly, the rest would be within global Lehman and its consolidated subsidiaries. And as I said, for the cash split, 73 million out of the 108, 35, let me put it like this, within the GRI perimeter, and 73 accordingly combined Antigua and Nassau. But that would be the level of detail we would like to disclose and not go into the individual financing and net debt structure of each entity. With respect to Port of Adria, so as you've seen, about 19.6 million is the total commercial EBITDA generated within the first 9 months, both on Antalya and Port of Adria combined, approximately 1.5 of which it comes from Port of Adria during the first 9 months of the year.
On the strategic side, Greg, Port of Adria, in line with our strategy to remain as an exclusive cruise port operator, it will be sold. So we are already discussing with potential takers. If not, if nobody takes it, we'll take it out as a parent company from the portfolio.
Okay, thank you.
Martin?
Any further questions, Greg? Is that you?
That's me covered. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Next question comes from Constantine. Constantine, please unmute your line and go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks. Thanks for taking questions. Just a few housekeeping questions. So when I think about sort of the group, just to make sure I understand it correctly. So basically, we should expect that 140 million of sort of cash proceeds should come from Agdenes sale, right? And maybe if you could comment on the sort of likely timing of closing of that transaction. And then when I think about sort of, when I think about the waterfall from sort of bond perspective, basically we're going to have inside of restricted group 140 million of cash from the sale of Agdenes as of today, and correct me if I'm wrong, but we have 35 million of cash inside of the restricted group, and then it looks like there is another 95 million of sort of presumably mostly structurally senior secured loan facilities And there is this big sort of Ortadogo Le Mans loan that is coming due in 2020, which is 34 million. But overall, sort of, there are 48 million of sort of loans that are coming due in the next 12 months within the restricted group. So I guess my question is, well, firstly, you know, my questions are, firstly, if you could confirm the timing of 140, when should we expect, you know, that cash proceeds to come? And secondly, if you could confirm 35 million of cash inside of restricted group. And then thirdly, if you could confirm sort of what's the plan for those loans, and in particular, you know, the Turkish loan, to expect that sort of, you know, Akdeniz sale proceeds to go to sort of repay that facilities, or, you know, maybe the bank will roll. So how to think about it? So that's kind of like my first sort of set of questions, and I have another follow-up question that I'll ask later.
Okay, let me answer the closing of the transaction. We have 4 months to close the transaction according to the SPA, but most probably it should close this year or latest by end January. It's moving very fast. On the number side, but 140 million is enterprise value, so please keep that in mind. I'm going to pass to Jan to continue on the numerical side of the equation.
And sorry, just on 140, so understood enterprise value. Is there like any deferrals, or, you know, the proceeds should come in one go once the transaction is closed? Do you have like any sort of KPIs or deferrals in as part of the transaction, or it's relatively straightforward from that standpoint?
There's no KPI, but there is a deferral, and Jan will go to the details.
Okay, thank you.
So as Mbe just said correctly, the 140 million is the agreed upon enterprise value. The net cash proceeds can't be determined with certainty because, you know, as customary, there would be an enterprise to consideration bridge from deducting elements of net debt and debt-like items as defined in the SBA. There would be transaction costs, transaction-related costs, including taxes, although those are, you know, relatively minimal because of a, you know, favorable tax treatment in Turkey. Also, you know, we handled the transaction mostly in-house, so also transaction costs are not material. So, and there is a small portion of you know, consideration withheld by the buyer as part of the agreement to be paid up to 12 months following the closing of the transaction. The net debt of Port of Akdeniz as the beginning of year end, at the beginning of this year, was around 30 million, that ballpark, and subject to the discussions with lenders, subject to, that's part of the restricted debt, currently still around the same level, and subject to the discussions and agreements around with the existing lenders and the buyer, if that debt remains within Port Akdeniz, this amount will be deducted from the 140 million plus the withholding share. So that would give you an indication of the net cash proceeds, the net cash proceeds at closing.
Mm-hmm. And on taxes point, is it like we're talking about millions, or it's within like a 1 million sort of number?
I didn't quite get the what are we talking about, millions or not millions?
So transaction costs, understood, mostly was done in
single digit million dollars, not much more.
And then, so when it comes to sort of retention of cash proceeds by the buyer for 12 months, we're talking about, again, like, is it like a big number, or it's more like, you know, $10-15 million or something like that?
Yes, that number is at the lower end of that range, probably single digit, or you know, about double digit number, exactly.
Got it. And then what's the plan for the so there are 48 million of sort of maturities for term loans for the next 12 months, and overall sort of term loan balance within the restricted group is like 96 million. I understand 30 million will be retained at Akdeniz, so we should you know, disregard that. But for the rest, is the plan to sort of, you know, address those maturities somehow through repayment, or like any color on the sort of discussions with the banks at OPCO levels.
Sure. Let me take this question as well. So we do have, as you know well, we do have the bulk of this debt, if you exclude the Actinis portion, is the loans incurred in the context of the acquisitions of both Croyers, Barcelona, and Valletta. So those are long-term maturities which remain, unaffected. We have excellent relationships with the banks, all understand the current situation being temporary, and no difficulty whatsoever continuing to service those debt that's included in the survivability analysis previously mentioned. So the bulk of these loans are those type of long-term loans which remain unaffected by the sale of Port Actinis.
Got it. So presumably sort of OPCO loans at Barcelona, Valletta, Cagliari, Porto Padre, and Barcelona will kind of sell at that level when it comes due. Ortadogu, Liman, which is 33.7 million as of June 20, that is something that being addressed as part of Actinis transaction. And then there is another like 2.7 million at the issuer level that is coming due in 2020. So that is presumably being addressed from the sort of cash proceeds or cash on the balance sheet. Is it kind of like right to say?
That was reported as a short-term loan because, as customary for those revolving facilities, those have a short maturity. But we don't expect any issue rolling those over. It's more really of a classification, IFRS classification issue with respect to the classification of those loans as short-term. It's de facto correct, but not in practice.
Yeah. Got it. And then, so the latest cash position inside of restricted group is 35 million. Is it right? Got it. And then when we think about sort of cash proceeds, so before now and the closing of the transaction, whatever Port Actinis is going to generate is going to accrue inside of restricted group, right?
Correct.
Got it. And finally, my question is about this relationship deed that has been in place with basically sort of independent non-executive directors. They used to have a relationship deed in place with Global Ports Holding BV and Global Yacht Trim Holding as well. That has been in place historically, but for some reason it got terminated. There are various sort of thought processes around that, but maybe if you could sort of clarify, what's the reason for that? That's my last question.
Well, if you don't mind, let me answer this question. The reason is very simple. We have the muscle, and GPH, unfortunately, doesn't have the muscle. And as far as the group is concerned, GPH is the most valuable, as far as I'm concerned, GPH is not the most valuable entity, not this year, not next year, but 2023 or 2024, it will be again the most valuable entity. Therefore, as we have a relatively very big muscle compared to today's GPH, that's the whole reason.
Got it. That's super helpful color and sort of great work managing the cash burn of the business in such a difficult environment. So thanks very much for comments.
Thank you,
Constantine. The next question comes from Ruslan. Please unmute your line and go ahead.
Hello. I have two questions, basically. The first one is, you have a coupon date approaching pretty soon. So do you have any plans on or maybe opinions on whether you honor the payment of coupon in that quite challenging environment? And my second question comes as follows. Basically, I understand that the portion of the bonds maturing might be covered by the proceeds from the sale of Port of Actinis, but can you give us the at least the indication of what might be the sources of the other part repayments? I understand that there is a Port of Adria sale potentially might be coming towards that, but in the circumstances of where the cruise industry does not generate a lot of cash flows, that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Let me answer the coupon part, and the rest I'll leave it to Jan. The coupon will be paid in time, like it has always been paid for 30 years of my career. The second part is Jan.
Yes, I mean the question was well formulated. That obviously the following the sale of Port Actonis and the continued and maybe even slightly increasing challenges in the cruise industry, addressing the Eurobond maturity is a challenge, no doubt. We, as I said, I would prefer to update all investors and partners with once structure and timing is finalized. It's a process, we're in the middle of the process, rather than, you know, create speculation about potential alternatives. But we do have alternatives and evaluating all options available to GPH, and I have high confidence and that we can address this successfully.
Thank you.
We have one more question on the chat. Extension on your port management contracts due to COVID-19, especially for Barcelona. Yes, there are some extensions and most of them are by law. I don't know if Barcelona is one of them, but I know Italy is one of them, for example. We'll get back with full details on this.
And they also, I think the question also refers to COVID. And yeah, I think it might be worthwhile to add that due to COVID, we have been getting some deferrals and discounts in terms of concession fees. For example, in Barcelona, we got a 60% discount from the government for the concession fee. That obviously is not the question, but it's related.
Yeah. Thank you, Emily. Martin?
I'm here, yeah. So at the moment, there is no more questions. We'll give everybody 10 or 15 seconds. Again, raise your hands or indeed use the chat box if you have any questions. Okay, looks like there is no further questions. I'll now hand you back over to Mehmet or Emre to conclude the call.
Thank you, Martin. Thank you, everybody. It lasted longer than I thought, about an hour. And good questions, so thank you for your questions. As usual, and as I always said, we like to be extremely transparent. Therefore, please feel free to ask further questions if you have any after the call as well through Martin. 2020 has been a very challenging year for the business, and most probably one of the most challenging years I have known in my personal career. Some of the measures that we have been forced to take to reduce cost and preserve cash have directly affected many of the GPH's teams. So I'd like to really extend my gratitude and thanks on behalf of the board to Emre Bey, yourself, Jan, and Martin, everybody on the call from GPH, as well as the whole team. Unfortunately, such measures have also been necessary to ensure GPH has sufficient cash resources to withstand an extended cruise shutdown in 20 and 2021. As mentioned during the call, we have a survivability time frame of close to 20 months without a single revenue. I do believe that the actions were taken mean that GPH now is in a position to withstand an extended cruise shutdown, a situation that we started managing back in second quarter. The management believes the group has sufficient resources to withstand an extended cruise shutdown into 21. However, following the sale of Port Actonis, maintaining sufficient liquidity is very pivotal to the group's ability to trade through this extended cruise shutdown, particularly as the threat of a second wave of COVID-19 cases and a return to severe travel restrictions, especially when it sweeps across Europe. Having said that, I always compare to the other businesses in our industry. We're in a better shape, much less valued, that compared to the cruise lines. The day they start saving again is the day we will go back to business like 2019. And my personal estimate is that we will see 19 numbers as early as second half of 22. Thank you very much. Thank you, Martin.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everybody. That now concludes the call.